Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hi. Today on the Irish Tech News Podcast, we have an interesting entrepreneur and innovator who's going to be talking to us about their latest product. So first of all, who would we have the pleasure of speaking to today?
Hi, Simon. My name is Nick Cote. Been in the crypto space for the past 11 and a half years. Done a whole bunch of different roles. We built one of the first centralized exchanges back in 2012. We launched a couple of other exchanges. Almost one of the early Bitcoin derivatives platforms called One Broker and One Fox. And then now I built a large OTC network over the past 5 years. And currently taking those lessons learned and applying them to some new businesses with a focus on compliant mainstream adoption and product adoption. And that brings us to what we built with Marsbase, which is an decentralized OTC network. And also building out a secondary market for unvested tokens and in the future equities.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So that's great, and that's a good high level starting point. As you mentioned, you've been doing this for over a decade. So what inspired you and made you interested in getting back in the game to do Marsbase?
Being a manual broker for such a long time, you get to see the problems and the friction points in the secondary market, right? The fact that none of this even exists in a centralized space to this date is pretty crazy, right? I mean, people are still trying to put all the pieces together. And I think some of the hesitancy has been on the regulatory side. You know, we haven't had that regulatory framework put in place yet, but a lot of these types of transactions and practices are already defined with, through legacy institutions. This isn't something new, right? You can kind of think of it like an equity platform where you go to, it's the marketplace to go and trade unvested shares, pre-IPO, et cetera. It's just a way of tapping into illiquid assets and turning that into a liquid asset. And bringing that to the crypto space just makes sense, right? You utilizing NFTs, you can tokenize the value of something quite easily. The only other components there that make this stuff a little bit more difficult is the compliance side of it as well, right? A lot of these stuff, especially on the equity side, are deemed securities, whether they be SAFs or SAFEs, et cetera, right? So then you need to have those licenses in place to be able to do this compliantly within the US and at scale. And one could imagine that in the near future, as we do get more crypto-focused regulatory framework to work within, other countries in the G7 will be taking note of what that structure looks like and adopting similar or perhaps even more intense compliance requirements in the near future as well. So our strategy here is to not work within that whatever that framework is, but not having to wait and kind of pursuing these licenses now, so we're in a position. We view it as almost a regulatory moat for being a first mover on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then so like you say, there's definitely a wider awareness outside of the early adopters of the potential things that this could do well, while also needing regulation. So in some ways, how do you articulate to those that understand not very much about this, that maybe what you're doing is coming at a good time?
Yeah, I think it's coming at a great time. We've seen a lot of drafts of the policies in the US side coming out in the last couple of weeks. The Bank of International Settlements just kind of released a report on what their vision of money in the future is, and kind of like mm-hmm. how they want to position themselves as the trunk of a wider ecosystem, right? Essentially consolidating all of the global liquidity and removing a lot of that liquidity through commercial banks. Why use a commercial bank when you can just use us, the central bank? It's kind of their value proposition here, right? It makes sense from like a design perspective, but do we trust those institutions? We're talking about the guys who just ran the economy and currently are running the economy, global economies into the ground. at the moment. So, you know, they've kind of created the problems and they're saying, oh, by the way, we have a solution. I mean, I'm not personally one to fall for that trick. And I think a lot, anybody who's in the crypto space and investors who are looking into this space and these other legacy institutions, they're looking for alternatives, right? They're looking for a choice off the current path, you know, this disaster path that their policies have kind of created over the past, you know, 10, 50 years, one could argue, going back to like the 70s when it really went unhinged. So I think all of these points are converging probably in the next 12 to 24 months, kind of moving, you know, moving away from probably post-November. There's a, you know, the US election cycle is coming into play. So we're not anticipating that anything gets signed for them. But after then, I think the space is going to have a lot more clarity. And as a builder, I want to know what those rules are. I think we're moving, you know, the crypto industry is moving from a rule-less based ecosystem, kind of a sandbox, building, innovative, what works, what doesn't, things are going to blow up, right? That's the nature of any laboratory. And now we have some products, you know, on the lending side, on the OTC side, the settlement side, that have proven to be more efficient than the traditional systems, right? So there is value there. And obviously Bitcoin is its own beast, right? There's value there. It's a defined asset. And it's under the purview of the CFTC. It's not a security, which is the exact reason why you've seen such an uptick in its adoption to the private banks such as Silvergate or Signature. One of their main products is Bitcoin lending, right? Through these trusted custodians. And I think that's the key word here. Like, there's a huge debate about, you know, does a mass adoption, is it going to be self-custody? Is it going to be custodial? I think it's going to be a mix. And I think for the starting, your average user, having a custodial solution is probably the most, you know, safer way to go. I think that it needs to be the optionality at the end of the day for the user. And that's why I'm interested in building in this space. And that's why I think the time, you know, it is right to be launching these products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. This is the thing that, you know, it solves some issues better than their previous solutions, and it does some things better. So therefore, there is a massive opportunity, as you say, for a first mover. You've just been to Consensus in Texas, and then you were at NFT NYC in New York. So therefore, you've also been fortunate to be in a position to hear kind of what are people excited about and what's bubbling on the street. So from having just been to two pretty important conferences, What were your impressions from being there, and do you think that people is there a positive feeling about things going forwards, or, you know, I mean, is the volatility of crypto relevant or irrelevant to the kind of things that people are talking about at these conferences?
Yeah, I mean, I think to start on your first point there on volatility, I think any seasoned investor participant in this space just understands that it's as common as a sunny day. You can't escape it. You can't escape it for now. And I mean, if you're not comfortable with 50% drawdowns, this may not be the space for you. Or focus on, you know, traditional equity investments or things like that. I think the vibe, everybody's pretty positive, right? Like, the last 10 years have been a question of, is this experiment going to work? Does it have a place in the world? I think for like Bitcoin, at least, that answer has been, it's yes, right? We're already seeing that composability within private banking. A lot of, you know, just today, Citi announced that they're looking to do a self-custodial solution as well for digital assets and trading. Fidelity, like all of the major institutions are already rolling out crypto products. And like, as an incumbent legacy institution, you have one of three decisions to make. One, am I going to build something myself, right? Two, am I just going to go out there and acquire something? Or three, am I going to continue to attack it and hope that it goes away, right? I think at this point, the network effects are so large that number three just doesn't really an option and kind of makes you look dumb at this point, right? And number two is the most obvious answer for the majority of these guys. On the option number one, it takes years and, you know, to be able to build out a quality product. It takes years, you know, and the other thing is talent acquisition as well. What crypto developer is going to go and want to go work for a legacy institution, right? It's a very tough conversation. And you're looking at massive talent outflows at the moment from like all the large tech companies, a lot of these legacy banking and financial institutions, right? The prospect of self-ownership and self-directive is pretty appealing. And you know, I'm going to call it the Web3 community, the blockchain space. And it's very tough as a legacy institution to be able to compete with that. So they're better just to leverage their own resources, which is their brand and their capital, and just acquire or merge or sign partnership agreements with crypto companies and to streamline this process. So that's exactly what a lot of these guys are doing right now, right? So I think it's less of a question of are these technologies going to be here tomorrow? Clearly they are. Which ones are going to remain? Who knows? But our view is that if you're not at least following, basic compliance standards and you get in line with once those regulations come out, you're going to have a tough time. And you can look at historic reference for this around the kind of the development of the internet, right? For between like the early 90s, maybe even to like as late as 98, there was a lot of like regulatory uncertainty around this. I mean, we've all seen the articles. We've all seen the quotes of people questioning if this, the internet as a technology would serve people. It would still be here. It was going to be a nothing burger, a flash in the pan. How funny those people look today. And I think a lot of the people who are saying the same thing about blockchain and Bitcoin and some of these other technologies that have come out from like DeFi experimentation and NFTs, they're gonna rue the day that they had said this stuff. I think it's less. That's basically it.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think so. And like you say, those that double down on this for the previous time around, have become very successful. So I guess in that context, if things go well for Marsbase, what will good look like for you guys over the short and medium term? What are you hoping to execute on, and how will you see success or define success?
Right. So, I think it's a lot easier to measure success in this model, right? How much volume is running through our platform and what are our fees attached to that, right? It's not necessarily about user growth as much as capital flow through the ecosystem, right? Say for it, because Marsbase, we look to do two things. We talked a little bit about the secondary marketplaces and the opportunities there. I mean, you can go look at public resources for this as well. I mean, it's billions of dollars that get traded in these secondary markets, right? I mean, a lot of these crypto companies, they're minting a unicorn every month. All of that locked liquidity is part of the addressable market here. So the opportunity is quite large. And to date, there's been nobody who has actually been able to figure it out, put all the pieces together and package it in such a way that it is composable with current and upcoming regulatory guidelines. So that's the opportunity there. The other side is with order routing. We're looking to improve the plumbing, essentially, at the infrastructure level, right? If there's a large, so the illiquidity in the markets has been a historic problem for crypto. It's still an issue that's getting proved out right now, even with Bitcoin. Elon Musk was saying, we sold Bitcoin to prove that it's a liquid asset, or just as liquid as cash, I think were his words, right? Being able to move in and out of an asset quickly, that's what treasury, large public treasuries need. That's what any type of company needs. It's what many business models rely on, is liquidity. So we're talking into an industry where you only have a few major liquidity providers, right? The major market makers of the world, the GSRs, the Alamedas, the Wintermutes. Probably the most household names, but there's many others that operate under the surface, just aren't as public. But the point is that the liquidity is fractured through these different ecosystems, right? Early on in crypto, fractured liquidity was even worse, right? When we first launched decentralized exchange, there was no participation because none of that liquidity was visible and none of it could be really accessible from other chains, right? Nothing could be ported over. There were no stable coins, et cetera. Those issues still exist today, which is crazy. I mean, there's been improvements with interoperability, multi-chain, all of that stuff, but it all creates middlemen and other points where that, there's somebody touching it, that capital, and thus, that cost gets passed on to the user and the fees and stuff. And as we've seen with the majority of these protocols, the fees are low only when it's not being used, right? Essentially, it's like an auction system. You can kind of think of that as at a basic level for block space, right? More demand, higher the fees. So you can still, there's still improvements to be had there by a lot of these order books for, like, you know, any coin outside of the top 20. If you have like even a $50,000, $100,000 order and you hit market sell, you're going to have a market impact of, you know, 5%, 10% or greater. And that number only widens the further you go down the list, right? So people, you know, develop automated market makers, which essentially just routes orders more efficiently and saves you money, and they, you know, charge a fee for that. The idea here, so their mission is to provide more efficient markets while attaching a fee on top. We can kind of take that to the next level by saying, rather than dumping these into illiquid order books, route them to us. And from there, we will aggregate liquidity through our, you know, a market making partner, or, you know, through a whole bunch of different counterparties to take down that order and then not have to have that large market impact, right? So not only are you improving market efficiency but you're also improving the or dampening the fees and the costs to the user, right? If I sell $10,000, or I look to sell $10,000 worth of a token at $1, but, you know, it ends up having a 50% slippage through that order, I'm probably going to end up with a lot less than 10,000, right? But by using the order routing going to Barspace, you're able to set, you know, a preset discount, right? So you're selling it. It's essentially, it's very similar to a limit order, right? But you're actually dealing with liquid counterparties on the other side, versus having that just listed into a, you know, an exchange order book that has $1,000 volume, right? It's going to take forever to take it down. So that's the benefits of centralizing liquidity in this sense, and then essentially acting as an order flow aggregator for market makers who can then scoop up these liquid assets, right? They're tradable already, they're unlocked, there's no vesting attached, and then they can go put that out to the primary markets, but say more efficiently, right? TWAPing it out over time to minimize market impact, et cetera, versus the unsophisticated user who just wants liquidity now and just is happy to market dump it. They don't care about the optics, right? We've seen issues around this as well with teams or advisors, team members, et cetera, having to fund operations, whatever the reason, right? But they hit the market sell button nonetheless. And, you know, the optics are terrible. We've seen this so many times. I mean, the Cope team is another like low-hanging fruit example of this. The guy had the fund operations, sold 300K into an illiquid order book, and the price crashed. I think it was like 30% plus. And then that creates a contagion effect because it influences everybody else. And you kind of have like a panic mass, right? So this kind of avoids all of that. It checks a lot of boxes. The team, you know, keeps their credibility. It's minimal market damage, no harm to the investors, other holders, etc. And the executor of the order gets better pricing at the end of the day. So those are the two components. And I think measured success, I mean, let's look at, you know, FTX as an example. They're trading billions of dollars in volume across multiple assets, right? Our protocol is generating positive cash flow with only $50 million volume per month. So it's a fantastic business model. And I think our go-to-market strategy of, you know, integrating and positioning ourselves as like an infrastructure improvement to these automated market makers, it doesn't rely on retail participation, which one could argue the Fed policy is to kill the demand, you know, demand destruction, not only value destruction, is insane right now. Sustained inflation is like the greatest threat to any empire. So they're gonna have to reel that in, right? People are calling the Fed bluff right now, but I mean, historically, look at any empire with double-digit high inflation, it ends only one way. So I doubt there's a bluff there. But right now, until that's resolved, the retail demand is destroyed. Household savings down. Credit, you know, inflation is being put out on the credit cards. You do what you got to do. Credit rates are rising. You know, average person has $0 holdings. We know how this story ends. So until these things are resolved, or you have higher institutional capital participation, which again is dependent on the regulation and compliance. Retail strategies of growth and monetization through retail aren't necessarily the way to go here. You want to be more top down and working with the already, you know, the guys that are already doing massive volume and just kind of positioning yourself as a product upsell to what they're already doing. And they're able, there's an incentivization alignment to create a flywheel of value on this because you share in those fees, right? So, you know, say you have a 50-50 split with the AMM, they're incentivized to send you these transactions, these orders, because not only does it fulfill their mission of, you know, better, more stable markets, it's a win-win across the board on that, but they also get the monetary benefit of the transaction as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, and as we were talking about, you know, it does things better than how things were done before. So therefore, you know, there is a strong opportunity there. So then how can people learn more about Marsbase, and in what ways are you looking for people to interact and get involved with you guys?
Yeah, so our platform is live already. We're currently deployed it on the BNB chain. We targeted BNB because, I mean, historically has the most liquid order book. So, you know, address that first. We're rolling out to Ethereum here in the next week or so, and we have a full roadmap of deploying to the other layer ones near Polkadot, AVAX, etc. In the near future as well. But you can find us at otcmarsbase.io, and we're currently raising a seed round.
Cool. So look, that's good. And we'll include all of the details in the podcast text that we do. So Nick, it's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Likewise, Simon. Thanks. Great talking today.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.